Hi, and welcome back. We're up to a point in the Kuzari where the king has just heard this very elegant presentation of the philosopher, who has just argued that in order to achieve one's purpose and one's perfection in life, all one needs to do to achieve this perfection is to perfect one's intellect. By perfecting one's intellect, one attaches himself or herself to this thing called the active intellect, and thereby a person can achieve prophecy and immortality. So the king patiently listens to this presentation, and he responds at the beginning of paragraph 2 in the Kuzari as follows. The Kuzari said, "Your words seem logically sound and sufficient. However, they do not provide a solution for my quest. You said that specific action was not important, and that only knowledge and attitude of the heart mattered. I know myself well enough to judge that my soul is pure, and my actions are well intended before the Creator. Despite this, I still received a message that my actions were not desired, even though my intentions were. I must conclude that there exists a set of activities which are intrinsically desirable, and not just because the thoughts attached to them are." Now, what is clear from this response of the king is that the story at the very beginning of the Kuzari of the angel in the dream is really in itself the rebuttal to the philosopher before we even hear him present his argument. What the king is saying is that if the angel was telling me that my deeds are not acceptable despite my good intentions and my perfectly fine intellect, then there's a very specific set of behaviors that I must seek out. It cannot be as you say, philosopher. You had said that specific behavior is inconsequential, since the prime cause, your name for God, isn't aware of my behavior. But the dream itself proves to me that not only is God aware, he further is demanding that I figure out what the correct way to worship him is. Furthermore, what the king is saying, the proof is in the pudding. By your own admission, intellectual perfection, which you claim is the ultimate objective in life, is supposed to bring the individual to a state of such great perfection that he or she will achieve prophecy through conjunction, through this connection to the active intellect. But if so, and here's where we're going to read one more section from the Kuzari, from paragraph 4, subparagraph 2. So the king says, as a result of the philosopher's practices, their wisdom, and their efforts at arriving at the truth, we would have expected to see prophecy abounding among them because of their close attachment to spirituality. We should have by now heard of great miracles that occurred through them, and they should already have achieved a reputation for greatness in the world. We see, however, just the opposite. Those who have not studied your wisdom or prepared themselves according to your prescribed methods have achieved divine communication, whereas philosophers have achieved none of this. This indicates to me that the truth about God lies somewhere else, outside of what you have told me, philosopher. Now, once the king rejects the philosopher, he's now free to seek out the organized religions. As we'll see soon, he leaves Judaism for last, and he starts with Christianity first, and then he goes to Islam. Now, I mentioned last time that we see quite clearly that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi does not have very high regard for the world of the philosopher. He clearly disagrees with his understanding of how a human being is supposed to reach God and ultimate human perfection. Our question is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi right? Or is he right according to everyone, I should say? That is it possible for a Jew who is committed to Torah to find meaning and purpose through perfecting his intellect? Let's say he chooses the path of the philosopher. Is that okay? We can surely all agree that the philosopher's suggestion that it's not important to choose a specific regimen of observance, we know that that's false. We know the Torah commands us otherwise. However, can we possibly meet the philosopher halfway? That is, we can't accept your assertion that God is so far removed from our world that he is unaware and unappreciative of our worship. But is it possible to embrace the philosopher's position that one primary way of conjoining and coming close to God is through intellectual perfection? Can we accept the notion of something called an active intellect within Judaism, a sentient, call it a shaliach, a proxy of God that interacts with this lower sublunar corporeal realm that we can connect with. Our initial reaction would be, reading the Kuzari, that this is all unacceptable. But the Rambam, Maimonides, and many of his medieval colleagues, such as the Ralbag, the Ibn Ezra, and others, apparently believed that the approach of the philosopher was compatible with Judaism. They composed essays and books on the principles of philosophy, embraced many of the ideas of Aristotle, and believed that the Greek philosophers were right in so many areas. Now, I want you to note that the Rambam feels so strongly about this that he spends the first four chapters of his Mishneh Torah with a brief overview of the wisdom of what he calls Ma'aseh Merkava and Ma'aseh Bereshis. These are two terms that are employed by the Mishnah and Gemara in Tractate Chagiga in the Talmud, which describe esoteric principles of reality both on a cosmic level and on an earthly level. For the Rambam, these two terms are descriptive of two disciplines of philosophy, metaphysics and physics, respectively. Thus, the Rambam not only felt that there was room for philosophy at a rabbi's table, he argued that Chazal themselves were engaged in philosophical discussions, and so his endeavor, his project of explaining Judaism in terms of philosophy, was simply a continuation of what Chazal of the Talmud had already started. The Rambam also felt, and he talks about this in the Moreh Nevuchim, he felt that the active intellect, this foreign concept of a sentient emanation that interacts with our world and provides human beings with prophecy, is none other than what the Gemara calls the Sar HaOlam, sometimes also known as Metatron, the archangel of the entire world that is discussed in mystical literature. So you see that there is, for the Rambam, much truth within the philosopher. He felt that there was definitely something there. It had been garbled and distorted in certain ways. The philosopher had taken it in directions that our sages never meant for it to be taken, but there was truth there nonetheless. He calls this truth Pardes at the end of the fourth chapter of his Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah and the very beginning of Mishneh Torah, and states that entering into the Pardes, into this orchard or paradise of intellectual philosophical speculation, is an endeavor that the Gemara says was done by various sages. Now, granted, not all sages succeeded in emerging from this intellectual exercise intact, simply because it is such an advanced endeavor that not all are ready to engage in it. But it is an honorable and worthy endeavor when one is ready to do so. We see, therefore, that the Rambam had a very different attitude toward philosophical speculation and the entire realm of Greek philosophy that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi views as something completely foreign and incompatible with Judaism. The Rambam, on the other hand, sees it as a vital component of what is expected of a higher level Torah Jew. It's just disguised in a different form because the Greeks had taken it and redressed it and recodified it and re-identified it, but it's really the same, it's the same kind of thing that our sages were involved in for centuries. For the Rambam, there's therefore nothing wrong with using a system that is outside of the Torah, provided that you can demonstrate that it really always has been part of the Torah world, but just that it's now going by a different persona, a different facade. By analogy, just take a modern analogy. Look at how we synthesize and integrate Torah with certain modern disciplines. We have Torah in psychology, and we look at those as being perfectly compatible. We have Torah in science. Torah and modern conceptions of pedagogy that we implement in our schools and our yeshivas. This is a tradition that is deemed not only acceptable, but even desirable, because when a person implements modern psychological principles with a Torah life, he's not doing Torah and psychology. Psychology always has been part of Torah, but just with a different vocabulary. Now, it's true, there may be certain elements of undesirability within a particular discipline, but that doesn't mean that we should throw out the baby with the bathwater. For example, just because Sigmund Freud, the father of modern psychology, had a theory that man's ultimate motivation for doing anything is his libido, that doesn't mean that all modern psychology is nonsense. We have to know what is the proverbial fruit and what is the proverbial peel. If we view the Rambam's effort in this light, it doesn't seem so outlandish. But of course, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, as we will continue to see, knows enough philosophy He's really quite savvy in philosophy, and he has the ability to dispute it and to rebut it. But in the end, he will inform us that it's just not worth the effort. There's no reason to take this foreign god and mix it together with Torah. It's too high of a price to pay if we invest in trying to integrate philosophy with Torah. In the end, not only will our efforts not bear fruit, according to Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, they may actually end up confusing us and leaving us in a worse state of mind than had we just left the whole thing alone. Now, we'll be returning to this very important dichotomy between the Rambam and Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi quite often when we continue to discuss Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi's ideology of Torah and Judaism throughout the Kuzari. It'll be important for us to remember that although we are studying the Kuzari, there sometimes is a Rambam lurking in the shadows that may have a different take on some of the things that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi explicates so elegantly. It will be important to be on the lookout for those places where there is tension among these great Rishonim, these great medievalists, so that we get the full picture.